Hello, welcome to my talk, I'll accumulate efficient computation of hydrologic parameters in grass. First, a little bit about myself. My name is Hide Cho. I'm teaching geospatial science and computing at the University of North Georgia. I have been a GrassGIS core developer since 2000 and have 12 years of ArcGIS development experience and 10 years of water resources consulting. You can find my Git repositories from this GitHub link and let me know if you have any questions. You have my email address there. Also, the source code of ArcCumulate is available from this link. Let me introduce you to the web-based hydrologic modeling system called WiderMode. The basic idea is to integrate RTOM model, which is a cross module for the topography model, stream flow data from USGS, and weather data from NCDC into a seamless web-based modeling system. So here is the proof of concept implementation of WiderMode for Texas. It's under GNU Federal GPL license version 3. I try to implement a transparent system so the user can inspect my source code and modify it if they choose. I used open source stack including GrassGIS, PostgreSQL, PyWPS, MapServer, OpenLayers, and Apache. Initially for base maps, I used Google Maps API, but because of their licensing changes, I switched it to Bing Maps API. So this screenshot shows what the system looks like. And here, all these dots are USGS gauging stations. Blue means those stations have been processed and are ready for service. Red means they have not been processed yet, but the user can initiate processing. Let's look at the typical workflow for top modeling. I use the National Elevation Dataset, or NED, to delineate watersheds and calculate longest flow path and wetness index from inside grass. And then I download weather data from NCDC to create input files for our top model, which will simulate stream flow and generate simulated stream flow time series. Then I download observed stream flow time series from USGS and evaluate the objective function. So here my goal is to minimize the objective function by adjusting the model parameters. This is a repetitive process. It's called parameter calibration or model optimization. Then what about the WiderMode way? Well, I try to automate all these manual processes and simplify the workflow. So basically in the web app, you zoom into your study area and click on a USGS gauging station, then the WiderMode will do the rest. But this calibration process is not yet implemented, but I have a plan for that. What about the data flow or request flow? Here, the end user makes a request, then PyWPS passes the request to GrassJS, then GrassJS pulls the data from PostgreSQL or its own database and delineate watershed, longest flow path, and all that. And then it downloads data from USGS and NCDC and creates input files and runs our TOM model and then produces output files. Then MapServer grabs grass map data and passes it to OpenLayers so that it can draw the map on the browser, on the user's browser. Again, I use Bing Maps API instead of Google Maps API for base maps. Now, there are some challenges in web-based modeling. Time. Including myself, web users are not patient. I don't want to wait for more than several seconds for my request to complete. But it takes time to download online data, process DEM, and create model and simulate it. So I categorized USGS gauge stations into already processed, which is blue, and unprocessed, which is red, and I have a cron job that automates heavy data processing daily, overnight, without any user requests. But at the same time, the system also allows the user to initiate new processing. so later they can share their modeling results with other users. But all this is just pre-processing of data, and it requires a lot of data storage on the server, and it's slow. So the ultimate goal should be to improve the performance of geospatial computation, so that the system can respond to the user request on the fly, on demand, without requiring any heavy pre-processing of data. So those important hydrologic parameters include flow direction, accumulation, and longest flow path. What is flow direction? Well, the direction of flows based on these 9 cells, including the center cell and 8 neighbor cells. Based on the elevation of these cells, you can determine a single flow direction into the steepest slope. These numbers are all drainage encoding for GrassGIS drainage map. And flow accumulation is a raster that downtraces raindrops following flow directions. Or sometimes you can uptrace from the outlet. And the longest flow path. Here in this figure, you see some of these sub-watersheds, and then the longest flow path in blue, and the red point is the outlet point. Then what is a flow path? Well, flow path is water course from one point to another. Then the longest flow path, simply, is the longest flow path. But there can be more than one longest flow path in some case, if you have some tributaries with the same length. Now, what was my motivation for this research and implementation of R-Accumulate? The current LFP algorithm was developed by Peter Smith almost 25 years ago when the data was really coarse. And this algorithm produces grid output, which can be potentially dangerous in terms of generating valid hydrologic outputs. I'll cover that later. And it takes a long time because it involves a lot of raster computation, especially when you have a lot of watershed. So this algorithm is not really for a large number of watersheds. So let's look at his method. He creates a downstream flow length grid first. What is that? Downstream flow length starts from the downstream end at the outlet. The distance is zero. As you travel further from the outlet into the upstream side, then the distance grows. And at a headwater cell, you have the maximum distance on that flow path. And then he also calculates the upstream flow grid. Here, this is opposite. You start from headwater cells, distance zero, and then as you travel down, distance grows, and at the outlet, you have the maximum distance. If you add these two downstream and upstream flow length rasters, then you'll get the DFL plus UFL raster, where cells with the maximum cell value create the longest flow path in grid form. And you simply collect all those cells and convert those cells to vector, then there is the vector longest flow path. So this is the typical procedure for handling multiple watersheds or outlets. You have one loop, and inside that loop, there are a lot of raster computations. It takes a long time to process a lot of multiple watersheds or outlets. So it's not good. And there is a critical problem too. So in this figure, These green arrows are all flow direction arrows, and the blue line is the longest flow path. At the upstream side of this figure, you can see the blue line follows the green arrows really well, and then at some point where you have lumped cells, it suddenly skips one cell and jumps to the next cell. It invalidates the longest flow path altogether. Why? Because you don't have any direct flow path between these two cells. Why is it happening? That's because Raster 2 vector conversion tool is not a hydrologic tool. It doesn't understand flow direction. It doesn't understand hydrology. It just simplifies the final polyline output. So it just eliminate this vertex and just make a shortcut. So that is really, really serious problem, because the final output is not hydrologically valid anymore. And there are other problems. Again, it's slow. And S3 has the flow length tool, but it has limitations. For example, to calculate downstream flow length for multiple outlets, the tool doesn't take outlet points. It doesn't take watershed polygons. So you'll have to clip the DEM to each and single watershed boundary and run the tool individually. It just takes too long. So I employed a divide and conquer approach where R accumulate uses a purely vector-based approach. First, divide. I divided the problem of finding the longest flow path into smaller pieces in a recursive way. So I redefined the longest flow path recursively. Here, the longest flow path at cell I is the longest flow path at cell J, one of upstream neighbor cells of cell I, plus the flow path from cells J to I. And I define the function of J that returns the length of the longest flow path at cell I. Here, I use the same definition from here to define the function f of J, the length of the longest flow path at cell J plus the length of flow path between cells J and I is the longest flow path at cell I if and only if there are upstream cells. What if there are no upstream cells? Well, we have reached headwater cells, so we can stop there. There are no more upstream paths, so we return zero. Now the problem became finding all arguments J that maximizes f of J by traversing upstream cells starting from the outlet, and the search stops when there are no more upstream cells. Now, since this approach is recursive, programmatically, you can hit limitations in the stack memory, and your program can easily throw, you know, stack overflow issue or stack fault errors. So to avoid those potential issues, I try to eliminate non-candidate cells as early as possible. So for that, I defined two variables called the longest flow length and the shortest longest flow length. So let's say I have two upstream cells, I and J. I compare those two cells' minimum longest flow length and maximum longest flow length. Let's say cell I's minimum longest flow length is longer than cell J's maximum longest flow length. Then what does it mean? Cell J cannot be a candidate for this longest flow path discovery because its potentially longest flow length is still shorter than the other cell I's minimum longest flow length. So I can eliminate cell J very safely. Then, how do you know what the longest flow length is? Well, conceptually, if you align any upstream cells of the current cell diagonally, then those cells will produce the potentially and theoretically the longest flow path, because the diagonal length of a cell is always longer than the horizontal or vertical size of the cell. Then what about the shortest longest flow path? It is based on Hecht's law. If you're interested in derivation of this equation, you can check my publication. But the minimum longest flow length is S times square root of FAC. Here, S is the cell size, and FAC is the flow accumulation number. Even with this elimination process, I have still hit one stack overflow issue from a very large watershed. So depending on the size of the watershed, this recursion can always can consume all stack memory and cause a stack overflow. So the ultimate solution is to convert this recursive algorithm to an iterative algorithm, so we don't use limited stack memory, and instead we use a heap-based stack. So I implemented my own stack in the heap memory, and I have a single while loop, and I find upstream cells and push them into the heap-based stack and pop one at a time, and find more upstream cells and push them and pop until the stack becomes empty. So an empty stack means there are no more upstream cells. So you can stop there, and then you can downtrace from the headwater cells. So benchmark experiments. Probably, I may be wrong, but I assume that commercial software must be better in terms of performance. So I wanted to compare the performance of Arc Accumulate and that of Arc Hydro. I used this data. I downloaded 27 NED tiles and patched them, and then clip it to the Georgia boundary and generate 100 outlets randomly. I used Arc Accumulate and Arc Hydro to calculate longest flow path for all those 100 outlets. System specs. I used a server CPU, and the memory is a little bit higher than regular laptops. It is a 48 GB, and Linux kernel 4.4.14, and GRASS 7.7 SVN. Results and discussions. No matter how fast your program is, it has to generate valid output. If it generates invalid output, then it doesn't matter how fast your program is. It's just wrong, right? So I compared outputs from Arc Accumulate and Arc Hydro, and surprisingly, I found that Arc Hydro produced the wrong, not so longest flow path. So here in this figure, the red line is the Arc Hydro output, and the blue lines are Arc Accumulate outputs. So the downstream of this cell right here is all identical. So just this portion is different here. So at this point, for whatever reason, Arc Hydro picked these upstream cells and uptraced this way instead of this way, which is correct way, right? And I'll accumulate the right upstream cell and uptraced all the way to these two longest flow paths with the same lengths. So, in other words, Arc Hydro produced the wrong result. And what about the performance? y-axis is in a log scale. So, and the blue line is arc hydro, and the red line is arc accumulate, which means arc hydro's performance grew exponentially with the size of sub-watershed, while the performance of arc accumulate grew linearly with the size of sub-watershed. And on average, arc accumulate was almost 100 times faster than arc hydro. But as the watershed size grows, the gap between these two programs also grows in computational time. Arc accumulate can calculate some other parameters, including sub-watersheds, flow accumulations from flow direction as input. So I wanted to compare its performance of sub-watershed delineation to the performance of other similar programs, including gauge watershed from tau DEM, R-stream basins, and arc hydro. So arc hydro was the slowest, and the blue line is R stream basins. It was second best, and then double core gauge watershed was the next best, and then the light green single core gauge watershed was next, and R accumulate was the best. So it shows a very promising performance of this new R accumulate module, and I'll try to incorporate this R accumulate module into the wider mode for the next version, and hopefully I can eliminate the pre-processing steps altogether using this module. So conclusions: the fewer Rust operations, the better and the faster. And the performance of R accumulate is linearly growing with the watershed size, while the performance of arc hydro is growing exponentially, which is pretty bad. And the new approach is cost efficient and time efficient, and can be used for interactive hydrology modeling, for example, web-based modeling. So I'll try to incorporate this module into the wider mode later. So I have a good plan for that integration. And you can find these references from these DOI links. Thank you very much, and let me know if you have any questions.